Hi, everyone. Welcome to the TimingResearch.com Crowd Forecast News Show, episode number 202 for November 5th, 2018. We are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, but you can also listen to the audio-only version of all episodes now on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Just search for Timing Research and subscribe there. But if you're watching the video, you should see the PDF version of today's or this week's report right now. And if you have not had a chance to take a look at that yet, you can go to timingresearch.com/reports and you can get either the browser version or the PDF version there. I have Rob Hanna back to moderate today, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me back as well. We got a couple guys here today that I haven't had the pleasure talking to before in your Timing Research show. So should be interesting. We've got some different views here today. I'll let you guys introduce yourselves. We'll start with Sean. Sean, is it Kozak or Kozak?
It's Kozak, yeah.
Kozak, okay. Yeah. And Sean's of neurostreet.com?
That's correct, yeah.
All right, if you could just give us maybe a little background on yourself, your trading, your website.
Sure.
Let us know what we need to know, and that'd be great.
So I originally got started trading right around the 2008 crash. It was a great learning experience, but I originally started as a supply and demand trader coming out of the roots of Sam Seiden and his environment over with the Online Trading Academy. And essentially, I ended up gravitating towards the futures markets primarily, mainly just for simplicity. I also like the transparency compared to the Forex industry. The birth of NeuroStreet has been a collective sum of my experience and also the team that I have behind me. NeuroStreet is more of a trading school. We run several trading rooms. We have several education paths, mainly for market profile and supply and demand and order flow.
Okay.
But really, we're just active traders, we live and breathe this stuff. So it's great to be here and looking forward to sharing my experience here.
So you mentioned you trade primarily futures. Do you focus on index futures or all kind? You know,
yeah, that's a
commodity
that's a
futures.
Great question. For me, depends on the strategy. For market profile, myself and my team, we look at every futures market, just depending on the environment and the opportunity that presents itself, because we're trading on slightly larger time frames on an intraday basis. 30 minutes is the primary, because it was designed for floor trading essentially. The other side of that though is if we're scalping, I primarily focus on four markets. I'll trade crude oil, gold, the euro, and if I do pick an index market, it's mainly the YM.
Okay.
I'm mainly gold, euro, and oil. The three scalping markets that I primarily teach and focus on. Yeah.
And you mentioned you trade off of 30-minute charts a lot. So when you're doing that, are you in and out the same day all the time, or are you holding for several days?
No, it's intraday trading. We're mainly intraday swing, trading balanced levels of support and resistance from static profiles.
So we'll be in for a few hours at a time.
Could be. Sometimes, depending on the day, if we're in an inside day or if we're trading inside yesterday's value or anything like that, what'll happen is you might find levels get hit pretty quick, especially on the index markets, and you'll be in and out within minutes, depending on how fast they want to drive it back into the market. But it's sometimes you're in a market for a while. Sometimes you're in a market for a little bit. Sometimes you're in it for a while. So it just really depends on the day and the condition of the market you're trading.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Look forward to coming back and hearing more reviews on the market this week.
Yeah.
Lee, we have also Lee Harris with us of emojitrading.com. Lee, would you be able to give yourself a little intro here and let us know what your trading background is and a little about emoji trading?
Yeah, sure. So hi, everybody. In fact, listening to Sean, I would say it's about 80% similar approach to my own. In terms of background, I've been trading on and off since... God, I'm going to show my age. Probably the the early 90s. I first got into trading personally with traded options on UK equities. At the time, a friend of mine had been known to Blue Button, a runner on the floor of the London Stock Exchange, and he got me into traded options. I moved into CFDs again on equities during the 90s, but it wasn't until about 5 or 6 years ago I was able to really devote myself to trading full time. I had moved from having an IT career and then running my own businesses, and I sold out half of one of my businesses, and that afforded me the opportunity to take some time at in a trading arcade in London. And then I was really concentrating on futures. I thought, if I'm going to trade, I need exposure to the environment as to how to do it properly. And after 6-12 months of doing that, I realized I didn't need to rent an expensive desk or particularly expensive software in order to, quote, get the benefit of the prop firm's power, when actually, you know, the US retail trading industry and brokers could get me better leverage and there were better tools available than what I was paying for, certainly for price. So I got quite seriously into order flow, studied the footprint very heavily, looking at supply and demand analysis, plus market profile, volume profile, all these things, again, only on the futures market, because as Sean says, for transparency, you know, I believe firmly it's all about supply and demand, and you want to trade markets where you've got transparent visibility of the underlying supply and demand so that you can assess on what side of the market you want to be. And in my study of order flow, I started to write some tools that would make it easier for me to visualize what was actually going on between all the bid and ask data. And with a software development background, I thought, if I'm going to write these tools, I'm not the only person in the world that, you know, wants to avail themselves of them. So I wrote them to a commercial standard, published them 2 or 3 years ago as Emoji Trading. Okay. And since then, we've built up a nice client base of people that use our visualizations to understand what's going on in the order flow, predominantly for their future trading.
Interesting. So your client primarily are primarily utilizing tools that you offer to help them make some of the trading decisions to see order flow. Is that correct?
Exactly right. I mean, okay. we're not presenting anything magical that isn't there in the raw data, but we're making it easy to visualize what's going on in some of the patterns and characteristics that occur, and, you know, much easier to make a trading decision if you've got a word on the screen saying demand than assessing perhaps the relationship between 5 or 6 numbers on the screen.
Okay. All right. And do you train traders, or do you train people on using your software, or how do you view your clientele or your...
So we do have some, you know, we do have some overview videos which we publish on YouTube. We've got a few basic tutorials on the premise behind some of our indicators on our website. I have done ad hoc coaching. I continue to do so, but next year we will probably launch some classroom-based training sessions. Listen to things like, you know, the basics of order flow, supply and demand, some more advanced concepts, and then some sessions on things like trading system design and automation.
Okay, great. Interesting. Well, I look forward to talking to both of you more. I should have given a background on myself to start with, but I'll do that now. I'm Rob Hanna. I've been trading since the late 90s. Started trading full-time in 2001, which, similar to Sean, picked a great year, right? In 2008, you said. So we had some pretty wild intros to our full-time trading there. I focus really in two areas. One is swing trading, which is most of what I do, and I'll talk more about that later. And it's all quantitatively based for me. So I run a lot of historical back tests and look at numbers and see what the market's done based on similar setups, whether I'm looking at seasonality or volatility or price action or whatever it is. And then I also do some overnight trading as well. So I'll be looking to get in near the end of the day and get out the next morning. I started a site in 2008 called Quantifiable Edges. Quantifiable Edges is still around today. I have Quantifiable Edges, and I write a nightly newsletter there. And there's some other perks that go along with membership at Quantifiable Edges. And then in 2012, I started a site called Overnight Edges. And that was focused on that overnight trade I speak of. That merged with Master the Gap and became InvestiQuant a few years later. So Overnight Edges is still available through InvestiQuant. And I still go into the trading room there a couple times a week and talk about the overnight setup and whether I'm looking to take that and talk about different odds based on parameters we have there, looking at, you know, things like seasonality, price action, and internals. So anyway, that's me in a quick nutshell. Let's get on and let's first see where we are with regards to question one. And once we've established our views, then we can discuss them in a bit more detail. But really all I'm looking for here is what direction do you think the S&P index is going to be moving from today's open until Friday's close? Don't need any explanations. Just looking for bullish, bearish, up, down. One word answers here. And then we'll come back and I'll let you guys explain as much as you want and talk about whatever you want. We only got a few guests today, so we'll all have plenty of mic time. So I'll start. I'm looking for it to move up this week. I'll go from the bottom up then. Lee, how about you? Are you looking up or down this week?
For the end of the week, I'm looking down. But okay. In the, you only want one word, down.
Good. We're in opposition. Makes for a better conversation. Sean, how about you? You can say anything now.
Yeah, I'm indecisive. No. I'm actually neutral, to be honest. I do think it has the potential to go up.
Okay. All right, good. Well, let's talk about some of the reasons then. Lee, I'll let you go first. You're thinking it's probably going to be heading down this week. What's making you believe that? Or how confident are you also in that forecast? If you had to give a confidence level,
I'm 70% confident. I don't think we're going to plummet today and keep plummeting over the next few days. As I look at the market today, I've got an upward bias today, and if I don't do it today, I'll have an upward bias tomorrow. So I think we're going to go up to go further down. When I look at what's been happening over the past 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I'm overall bearish, but okay. We move in zigs and zags, and certainly say today, tomorrow, I'm expecting to go higher, but overall my bias long term is bearish right now.
Is that based on technical or fundamental, or give us a little
I'm looking at the supply and demand. So okay. As I'm looking at today's ES futures, I can see that at the daily high, we've got a situation known as unfinished business. The buyers are overcome by sellers, but we didn't reach a price level at which we ran out of buyers. So by extension, we have to find a price level where we do run out of buyers. Therefore, we're going to explore higher in order to go lower. That's why I've got a very near-term bullish outlook. But in terms of my overall bearish outlook, I'm looking at the low on... I just need to click my mouse, make sure I get the date right. I'm looking at the low on the... Let's have a look. On the 29th, so last Monday, which was my birthday. And I'm
Happy
looking
birthday.
At the nature of that low. Yeah, thank you very much. 27 again. And I'm looking at how we achieve that low. And it's not as if we had an excess of selling at that low. We didn't really have a lot of aggressive selling around the 2603 mark on the futures. We didn't see that we had a lot of people aggressively selling who were overpowered by strong passive buyers, so they were trapped. So I'm looking at this thinking we found a low, but there was nothing about that low that seemed excessive. And then if I look at my daily chart and I look at, classical chart patterns and emerging trend lines, I think, yeah, we could go lower on this.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Sean, I guess I'll let you go. I was going to go since I was bullish and then you were neutral, but I don't want to be rude and step in front of you. It's the first time we're talking together on the show, so.
Love it. If we're looking from a macro context, there's some points that I actually agree with Lee, and some points I'm a little indecisive in terms of where we're at. Without a debate, I think I'm looking more at a technical base in terms of my decision. The okay. reason for it is last week's value area is still inside of the previous week's value area. We're in a very large period of accumulation on a very macro level right now, and I believe that based on the fact that if I'm looking at the ES futures markets and I'm looking at the last 2 weeks of value are relatively within 5 points of each other. To me, that's not a lot of distance from area to area on a weekly basis. And then I also look at the fact that in order for us to continue higher, I think it needs to clear specific levels of interest. I think there's certain value area highs that are basically on a weekly and a monthly level that I believe that are going to act like magnets to price. When price gets to these areas, these are major, major decision points on a macro scale. And I think personally that in order for us to have a sentiment, they have to at least validate those levels by either breaking through them or rejecting them. And so that's why I still think that in order for me to have a bullish bias on the ES futures markets, I would need to see it clear the last 2 weeks value area high, and then see it come up and test the monthly value area high at 2,800.
So now you're talking value area highs as opposed to just a swing high on a price chart.
I'm looking at the fact that if we're from an intraday basis,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure.
Can you describe the difference for people listening here?
Sure. Yeah. So when we talk about value, it's about the collective exception or rejection of market, the auction theory of the market, right? So when we look at volume profile, market profile, there's a combination between accepted and rejected environments in terms of the entire auction of the financial instruments that we trade. So when I look at the value area highs and the value area lows, these are major areas of support or resistance. And you can get as granular as a scalping time frame, or you can go as macro as these big time frames. As you look at a macro context, the institutions, the brokers, the big boys, they are trading on much larger time frames because of liquidity requirements, and also for the fact that they're not looking at, you know, trying to catch 5 or 6 ticks on a market. They're really thinking about the big pool liquidity needs of institutional hedging environments, and also, you know, they're also providing the liquidity to the market as a whole. And so for me, these numbers are really, really important for whether or not the market's going to accept a change in value. So as we continue to move in one direction or the other, it's whether or not the market will continuously find value at those areas. And when we say find value, we say they're going to facilitate trade. And, you know, when we're in value, the market's in acceptance. And when we're not in value, the market's rejecting those price levels. So it's really interesting to see once you get to these areas of support or resistance, how the market reacts to them, because we're not the only ones looking at those levels. These are macro levels of importance.
And you're determining their macro levels based on price and volume?
Yeah. Or... So in the platforms that I'm using, like I trade primarily on NinjaTrader and mm-hmm. also on TradeStation. And so the platform tools have the ability for us to pull profiles. We also develop, like within NeuroStreet, we have our own advanced tools that we use. But for the basic level volume profile analysis, you could easily just pull a volume profile. And I look at from a macro context, which I'll show here later today, I pull a profile on a monthly basis. And then I also pull a profile on the weekly basis. And then I think that if you're going to be day trading inside those areas, those are areas we need to be aware of. And if we're to have a long-term sentiment on direction, we need to be clear that those levels need to be either broken or rejected.
So, and I'm not a big market profile guy, but I my basic understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that what you're looking for are areas where there has been a lot of volume traded in the past, and it's either, as you're saying, rejected or accepted in there. So you got to move, and you've seen, you know, there's been a ton of volume traded in this level or this area, and that's what you're looking for. And then there might be a few levels up where there's the next big batch of volume traded, correct?
In a way, there's a second part to it in my experience. The terminology can often throw a lot of people off in terms of value, rejection. You know, they hear the terms. It's no different than someone new to order flow, right? They start, what's order flow? But if you start looking at market profile, volume profile, the terms exception and rejection don't really mean nothing to a new trader. I think to somebody that's new coming in, our mindset are focused on, well, how do I get in and how do I get out? Where do I take my trades? You know, but when we look at the overall market as a whole, that's a collective sum of everybody making the same decision. So when we start looking at value versus outside of value, it's a result of the validity of the market facilitating trade. So it's terminology that gets used in market profile, and it's also terminology that gets used in this environment, if you will, that has certain jargon, right? You know, the value area highs, the value area lows, the point of controls, the VWAPs. Yep. These things are the jargon that get used. But really what's more important is what decision-making are we forming and what is our action around decision at those levels? Is that part of our strategy? What is the strategy, right? I think looking at a macro level on a weekly or monthly basis, that's not how I engage in trade. That's how I formulate an understanding of what's actually happening in the market. And then when I go down into my execution timeframes in the trading plan, I look at where's the exact strategy for getting into the market, where am I timing my entries and managing the risk. That's the more important part. But without an understanding of big picture analysis, it kind of gives you tunnel vision. And that's why I was interested to come on here today, because I think it adds a lot of value.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks for the detailed answer there, Sean. I'm going to get into some other reasons that I'm looking at things from a bullish standpoint. But before I do that, Lee, as an order flow guy, is there anything else you wanted to add to Sean's comments, or do you want to say anything?
Well, I'm in a lot of agreement with the approach that Sean has spoken about. I'm a big advocate of look at the structure of the market, you know, whether you're using market profile, volume profile, look at this across longer, shorter time frames. That will give you a sense of context. From that, you can take a bias for your trading plan. And as Sean described it, you then pick your execution time frame, whether you're working on a 5-minute chart or a 2500 tick chart or a reversal chart, and you're using that to align with the bias for your actual trade. And it's with that kind of approach and looking at the order flow on the execution time frame that you can really trade with extremely tight stops. So I'm kind of echoing a lot of what I'm hearing.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. So I mentioned I have a bullish bias, and it's really not a very strong one. If I look at the swing edges over at InvestiQuant, which is, we designed 9 systems that look out 1, 3, and 5 days, right? So we've got 3 systems based on momentum, 3 on acceleration, and 3 on seasonality. And then we've got 3 1-day, 3 3-day, and 3 5-day systems. And they don't all look at exactly the same thing, but they look at the same general concepts, right? So you've got what I mean by that is we got a 1-day momentum, a 3-day momentum, and a 5-day momentum system. And then what we'll do is we'll look at the aggregate picture of what all the systems are telling us. On an average aggregate basis, we're not looking at real strong numbers here. They're higher than neutral, right? But they're not what I would consider solidly bullish at this point. And that's largely because the 1-day and the 3-day are a little bit subpar right now, but the 5-day are actually looking pretty good. So looking out from Monday to Friday, it's suggesting about a 62% chance that the market's going to move higher, and it's a profit factor of about 1.5. For those people that aren't systems traders, aren't familiar with profit factor, it's basically gross gains divided by gross losses. So it's saying that if you traded a similar setup over time, you could expect to have about 50% more in gains than you would have in losses. Some of the studies I'm looking at quantifiable edges, I'm really not seeing anything appearing yet that's suggesting a downside edge. I have a few studies on right now that are suggesting an upside edge, including one I looked at over this weekend that looked at, you know, what if we get a strong thrust off of a 50-day low and the thrust being at least 3 days in length, what happens after that first down day? And we got that first down day after getting 3 strong up days from a 50-day low on Friday. There's been pretty good numbers over the next 2 to 3 days, right? So that doesn't take us all the way out to Friday, but that's, you know, another bullish hint. And just the lack of bearish hints or bearish edges are speaking to me right now as well. I know from Lee's standpoint, he didn't see a whole lot suggesting a washout, but I did have one indicator I call my capitulative breadth indicator. And it basically looks at the S&P 100 stocks and how many of them are capitulating at one time based on some proprietary criteria, quantifiable edges. And it hit a pretty extreme level about a week and a half ago. And normally that's good for it being higher several days out, up to even 20 days out. So I think it's reached, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it hit a 50-day low and had a CBI of at least 10, like 20 other times, and 19 out of 20, it was higher 20 days later, all right, going back to 1995. So that's given me some confidence that, you know, we got enough of a washout that we should have a bounce for a little while here. And those are just some of the things I'm looking at longer term. There's some other things that are coming into play, and maybe we can get into longer term stuff in a little bit. One thing I thought would be interesting to talk about also here is there anything that you guys would that could happen this week that would sway you off of what you're looking at? And for me, there's a couple of big wild cards. I'll go first here, I guess. One is the election, right? I mean, that could cause a sharp reaction in the market. We've seen that before 2 years ago, right? They got a sharp reaction. And then the other thing is the Fed. They got a meeting on Wednesday and Thursday. Normally it's Tuesday and Wednesday. I'm guessing they moved it to Wednesday and Thursday because they didn't want to make an announcement on election day, but I'm not sure about that. Or actually it was right. They didn't want to have a meeting on election day, it would be. I don't know the reason, but we've got two big news events happening this week, in addition to all the like tariff stuff and things like that that have been going on for a while. And so what I'm really looking for is, what are the reactions to that going to be, and what kind of edges are they going to suggest? You know, what kind of research will I have emerge from that? Are there things that you guys are looking at as important for this week that and it doesn't have to be news events, it could be technical levels that are being broken or other things. Lee, let me start with you. Is there stuff that's on your radar for this week that you're thinking could sway you out of your bearish position?
I stay aware of the events, to, you know, what's happening during the week and what's happening today, what's happening tomorrow, because, you know, that's, if we got big news tomorrow, we can expect, you know, maybe a tighter range there, inside day, all that kind of thing. But I don't make my predictions based on the macros. I stay aware of structural levels and, you know, levels that are likely to be tested. As to what will cause them to be tested, I don't consider the fundamentals. I just stay aware of where might the market go. What will cause it to go there is almost certainly going to be something related, something macro. But I'm not looking to predict or second guess the macro as a reason to go there. I stay aware of the levels. I'll check the direction it's going in. I'll look at the underlying supply and demand, and I'll look to jump on board the more power side who are making their decision based on the macro stuff.
Okay. All right. Sean, how about you? Is there anything that's on your radar this week that that people might want to be aware of, or things that might get you to swing one way or the other?
That's a great question. I agree with both of you in terms of awareness is key, in terms of especially the Fed announcement this week is a really big player in terms of how the market responds. The election, obviously, you've touched on this. So we're in agreements in the fact that we're all looking at the same information and how it's going to affect it. I will agree with Lee in terms of the fact that I'm also a technical trader. Anytime I've tried to have an opinion about fundamentals, my perspective is always different than Wall Street's, in terms of, you know, I might think something's bullish, but it may not be as bullish to the big boys, vice versa, right? So I've learned very quickly on that having an opinion about expectations of how the market's going to respond to a news event, it's not my job to do that. I think it's my job to learn how to trade what the market shows me. And I think that you know, news, these types of news events can actually be the driving catalyst to getting price to these key areas, right? So if, you know, one area on my chart is you know, is the 2800 level on the S&P. This is a major level of resistance set by a monthly value area high. So if we get some massive announcements coming in from you know, coming in from the feds or even election, if it drives prices up to those areas, that's a very important level to be paying attention to. May not be on an execution time frame, but overall in terms of changing sentiment of the macro market. So these types of weeks are great because it opens up the volatility. Like Lee said, you know, it's really nice to be able to go down to the execution charts once you have a plan in place for reducing the risk on the stops. But these news events, you got to be aware of them, and making sure that if you're new to trading or if you're just watching us for the first time, you know, get comfortable paying attention to how the market responds before trying to put your money at risk into those types of situations.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's very difficult to try and interpret or anticipate what's going to happen, even if you know the news ahead of time, right? So if you look at the election from 2 years ago, anyone that was looking at the futures that night, you may recall that when it started to look like Trump was going to win the election, futures went limit down. They were down 5%, right? And they had to halt trading. Then when it became certain Trump was going to win the election, they completely reversed and actually opened up the next morning. So it was the, oh my God, they're going to elect him. Futures went limit down. And then it was, well, they really are. It's happening. We know the result now. And within the night, it was back up to above zero. It's a pretty amazing thing when you know, it's the sell the rumor or buy the rumor, sell the news, however you want to do it that way, right? The Fed is something that I've studied for a long time, and that's some of the Fed announcement days have had a long bullish edge going back to 1982, and the bullish edge hasn't always been the same, but one thing that's I found fairly consistent is that if you sell off going into a Fed day, it generally means that there's concern about what the announcement's going to be. And that concern is normally overdone. So if you get a sell-off into a Fed day, that can lead to a strong bounce on the Fed day. And it's not just Fed days. It's really most seasonally strong days, right? So I consider a Fed day to be a seasonally strong day, but you could be looking at, I don't know off the top of my head, we got Veterans Day weekend coming up, right? And I can't remember if Veterans Day is generally strong or not, but let's say it is. You get a sell-off going into a seasonally strong day like Veterans. Thanksgiving's a more appropriate one. Thanksgiving, Wednesday and Friday around Thanksgiving have been seasonally bullish days. If we sell off 2, 3, 4 days going into that, that's normally a good buying opportunity. So those are the kinds of ways that I use Fed announcements and seasonality in conjunction with price action. The other thing that I'm looking out for here, and I'm wondering if you guys are looking at it as well, is the 200-day moving average. We cut through that a few weeks ago after being above it for a long, long time, and now we've kind of bounced up to where it's within range. A lot of my studies do use it as a filter. It's gonna, you know, it's not the be all end all of are you in an uptrend or a downtrend, but it can be a handy filter, and it is something that is looked at by a lot of people. So it is something that I find to be somewhat important. Are we going to be above it or below it? Do you guys use it? Is it something you're looking at? Is it Lee? What about you? Do you care about the 200-day moving average at all?
No, I don't pay any attention to any price-based indicators. Okay. Although I do maintain an awareness because everyone else is looking at them. So I can apply this to MAs, pivot points, Fibonacci. I'm not going to make my decisions based upon the quote predictions that these things or chart patterns are telling me, but I will maintain an awareness of these levels, which lots of other market participants are looking at, so that I can be prepared to watch how the market's reacting to these levels and make my decisions as whether they hold or whether they break. So it's kind of subtlety that, you know, I'm not going to make decisions based upon them, but I am going to make decisions based upon reaction to them.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, a lot of trading is keeping it within your realm, right? There's only you can only look at so many things, and if you got something that's giving you an edge, that's what you need to focus on, not everything all around you, right?
And you know, I'm a big subscriber to the view that, you know, the interaction of the supply and demand in the traded volume, that is actually telling me what happened. It may have happened because of a 200 AMA or a pivot point or a phase of the moon if you use trader bait, but actually, do I really care what the cause was? What I really care about is there were 8 times more buyers and sellers, and if they chose to react to phase of the moon or a 200 AMA, actually, I just want to be on board the direction they're going in.
Okay. Sean, you want to add anything there, or give your opinion on the 200, or?
Yeah, well, it's interesting is, you know, I personally don't use macro moving averages. However, with NeuroStreet, we've designed proprietary software that actually uses volume profile averages. So we've converted the EMAs and the SMAs to volume driven detection. So on a micro level, we use those for entry and exits in terms of looking at timing entries around the volume averages. But like Lee said, these are major areas of interest, or these indicators are levels of importance, and I'm aware of them, but I don't use them for entry and trade management decisions. I use them for market context and also to see how the market reacts off them and to gauge whether or not they're going to dictate a change or an acceptance of direction. And then it's interesting because we also use order flow and volume on a smaller time frame after seeing what happens at these areas. So it seems to be a common thread amongst the three of us. But yeah, I mean, knowing about them is important, but from an execution perspective, it doesn't sway my decision.
Okay. All right. Good. I was going to move on to our question of the week here, unless you guys want to jump in with anything else to add. I should note that Timing Research, the survey this week said 71% were thinking higher and 29.4% were looking lower. And you don't ever know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but David helps us out there saying that similar conditions have happened 26 times in the previous 266 weeks. Majority sentiment was correct 58% of the time. So, and the average S&P move of 0.29%. So, sounds like a possible small upside edge based on the Timing Research report. You know, and we're all basing our decisions on different things, but that's where the survey is looking this week, and that's probably right about 58% of the time. according to the numbers, for similar situations. All right. The question of the week is, what types of trading do you focus on? And I think we already talked about that a little bit, but I'll give you guys a chance to expand upon on some of your thoughts there. What types of trading do you focus on, and why? And have you tried other forms of trading that didn't work for you as well? And that may be the more interesting part of the question. Why, you know, do you think the other forms of trading didn't work for you because there's no edge in what you were learning, or that you that maybe there was an edge but that it didn't fit your personality, or you know, whatever it is? Sean, why don't I start with you? I think I've started with Lee the last few times. We know you're mostly market profile now, mostly futures now. Have you always been that way? Are there other things you've tried in the past that didn't work for you? I think you mentioned Online Trading Academy came through for a little while there.
Yeah, so I'll just kind of explain quickly. I originally started trading supply and demand, basically through price action analysis. That's how I learned my starting point. And it was a great basis to build a foundation on. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first started, I'm assuming everyone can relate, but it was information overload, trying to study too many markets, too many indicators, too many things. So what I ended up doing was, over the years of experience, I've really simplified. Like, market profile is one strategy I implement, but I actually scalp order flow and supply and demand on intraday tick charts. So I trade market profile levels while I'm also scalping. So I don't scalp as many markets as I cover market profile, because market profile I trade on 30-minute time frames. So I have the flexibility of looking at global assets from a basket of instruments. Mm-hmm. But when I'm scalping, the decision-making time and the room for error is less with tighter stops. So for me, it's really about market timing and knowing that if I'm going to focus on implementing strategies that have worked for me and our students, it's about simplifying down to a couple markets and mastering them, and just really being a good trader, as opposed to trying to trade everything under the sun, if you will. And that's why I pick a few primaries. Like, when I scalp the euro, I scalp gold, and I scalp oil. And when I trade intraday profiles, I look at everything: indices, currency futures, energies, metals, debt markets, you name it. It's just a matter of being able to look at when the opportunity presents itself.
So let me ask you a little bit about that, since you're doing two different strategies there.
Yep.
Do you find that they're very close to each other? For instance, if you're good at one, you can be good at the other, or is it a completely different kind of trade? And then, I guess, as a follow-up to that, have you found your performance to be correlated between them?
Or, great question.
Or uncorrelated, and is that why you're trading the two different strategies?
Well, actually, I originally wasn't a market profile trader. I was a supply and demand and order flow trader. And what ended up happening is NeuroStreet expanded into becoming a larger trading school. We ended up bringing on another educator that works with us in terms of their experience. Really, really good track records and performance. And so what we've done is we've expanded into the market profile space. And as a result of working with other market profile traders, I've just acquired the skills and learned the strategies. So I'm primarily supply and demand and order flow based, scalping the markets on small timeframes. But what I've learned is, you know, you kind of, if you're willing to be humble enough to learn better and bigger opportunities, if they're there, why not take advantage of them? And right. So, you know, I come from a backtesting environment too. I spent years backtesting strategies and looking at, you know, statistics and stuff. And the more I tried to automate and put everything into a very tight box, the more I became more frustrated in trying to build the perfect system. So I learned that if I simplify down to just sticking with what I'm good at and developing the skill set, it becomes an opportunity. And I'm a firm believer that that a trader should focus more on one strategy at a time. I think that the goal should be to build the skill, get good first before you get fast, and then expand. I've been running trading rooms and looking at charts for a very long time. And as someone who's designed the training curriculum for a lot of traders, I've learned to pick and choose the battles. And I think that if we're going to, you know, provide some guidance to new traders learning, we may look at several strategies, but it doesn't necessarily mean you need to trade several strategies starting out.
Okay. And from your standpoint, I'm guessing futures helps you focus as well. I mean, there's a limited number of futures markets to trade. It's not like you got thousands of futures that are opening at 9:30 a.m. every day, right?
As a company that teaches traders, it's been a common denominator discussion amongst, you know, market expansion. I mean, the Forex market's a really big market. The stock market caters to a different crowd of people looking to manage their nest eggs. Day trading stocks is, you're competing against prop shops, and there's a lot of different perspectives to that. Also the regulations involved in day trading the stock market, right? A lot of traders are faced with different perspectives. Futures to me is exactly what you just said. It's a simple, highly leveraged, highly monitored, volume transparent market that is regulated by the biggest boys in the business. And, you know, it provides the liquidity and the volatility that can build a base for a strong business. So, you know, that's why I stayed with futures. All of our software and strategies can be applied to stocks, futures, and Forex equally. It's where do you choose to focus?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Interesting. Thanks, Sean. Let me get to Lee and see what you have to say. We already know a little bit of what types of trading you want to focus on. You can tell us a little bit more about that. And then additionally to that, Lee, have you tried other forms of trading that just didn't work as well for you, and why do you think that was?
Yes, so after my path into trading starts with traded options and CFDs, and this was all about just getting leverage. And then I settled on futures really because of the volume transparency. We have clients who ask, you know, can you use your techniques for Forex and go, well, you know, you can count the upticks and the downticks, but who are you playing against? And where's the transparency? Where's the single exchange? Where's the visibility of the volume? And then I think about that on equities and dark pools and also trading venues. And I like the purity of futures, the fact there is a transparency on the volume, the fact that even though the pits are pretty much all gone, many markets still respect the historic pit trading hours, and you see large tranches of liquidity come in. And what I have found that has enabled me to do is come up with a day trading style that looks at two or three styles of trading during the day, partly based actually on some market profile principles. So, you know, during that first half hour, can we scalp the ticks and build some realized P&L? Can we then in the second half hour look to trade the range extension? Can we trade the break for the initial balance? How far are we going to go? Can we get a reversion trade in, you know, midway morning or at lunchtime? And I like the way the futures market allows you to build a routine, which potentially you can even automate. You can automate various phases of this, because I think you have to be able to treat this as a replicable business. Mm-hmm. So if you can find a structure and some supporting tools and visualizations which work, you may well have to change some of those parameters if you're trading soybeans versus the Bund versus E-mini. But if the principle is in the first half hour, I'm going to scout based on momentum, and then I'm going to look for a breakout trade, because more likely than not, we're going to see a breakout in the first hour at some point. And then it's not going to go that way forever. You know, it will reverse at some point. And I think that for me, combined with the volume transparency, just provides you the framework against which to run a business. You know, going back 20 years, when I was trading CFDs and equities, I'd have my Mesa stock probably on my IBM PC or my app 2, God knows, you know, scanning top 350 equities in the UK for what were the RSI conditions combined with something else. And for me, that's like putting a blindfold on and, you know, doing pin the tail on the donkey. I'm much happier now that I've found a regimented method of looking at a handful of markets, and you can apply this day in, day out.
Okay, great. And you mentioned, you know, setting it up so you got different kinds of trades during the day. And that's similar to Sean in that he's trading different styles during the day as well. Do you find your different trades during the day to be highly correlated? Do you have, or are they uncorrelated? Like, does the breakout trade not matter with the early morning scalp trade? Or are you more likely to have a winner in the breakout trade if your scalp trade did well?
I regard this stuff as independent. Okay. I think you depending upon the time of the day, the time during the session, you can expect different things to be occurring. You know, you'll see different amounts of liquidity. You'll see the market moving at different speeds, at different points during the day, if the liquidity is there or not. So it's about applying the appropriate technique for the stage of session which you're in.
And so I'm guessing, like, I know some day traders that would say, all right, you know, I, I already had three losers and I'm down this much today. I'm done trading for the day. I'm not doing it anymore. But since you're viewing your trades as separate and independent, you would never need to have that kind of call it a stop for worse of a lack of a better word right now. Is that correct?
No, I will trade off a very tight daily stop. My daily loss limit is low because you've got to preserve the equity.
Okay.
But if I'm not reading the momentum right in the first 30 minutes, where my objective is, can I scout the ticks and build up some realized P&L to buy more size later in the session? If I'm not getting that right, I will just stop at that session, lick my wounds, see where I am relative to my daily loss limit, and then be either I'll just walk away and come back another day, or I will be extremely picky looking for my breakout trade or my reversion trade because I've eroded my opportunity to trade. So they're not independent. One of the things that I tell my students when I coach, lots of people have got this fear of missing out. They enter too early and it breed actually rather than fear. I don't want to miss the opportunity of making money. And none of us can actually open a position and know with 100% certainty we've got a winner. Our bias might be right. Our entry trade location might be right or suboptimal, but we can still mismanage the trade with a perfect entry. So what I tell my guys, I've got to get clear in their head, every trade is an opportunity to lose money. So actually, if you miss a trade, all you have missed is the opportunity of losing money. So don't beat yourself up. better to do nothing on the day. Let's say your daily loss limit is $250 and you're sitting at -$175. Is it really worth the grief of trying to budget that $75 headroom you've got, or actually switch the computer off, go and do something else, come back tomorrow? That's going to be more productive. I guarantee you 10 times out of 10, you're going to hit your $250 loss.
Okay. All right. Interesting. I guess I'll give my answer to the question, and then we're getting low on time, so I'll we'll move it along. As I mentioned, most of my trading these days is swing trading, and I do trade the overnight as well, where I'll look to get into a position at the close, and then I'll be looking to get out of that at the next day's open, unless it hits my stop or limit in the overnight. I do put in stops and limits when I'm trading overnight futures. I do some ETFs as well, in which case I'm not trading with nearly the leverage, and I'm just fine holding till the next morning. I trade some longer term stuff, and I have some systems that look at longer term. The reason I like to do swing fits my style. It fits my personality. Overnight, I found there to be a good edge. And longer term stuff, I found some nice edges there as well. And the performance of the three is not correlated for me. When I'm in a market that is a bull market melting up, right? That's when the longer term stuff can make some money. But the swing stuff, a lot of times I'm sidelined, right? It's not doing a whole lot. I need pullbacks to be able to buy into. And I like to have a little bit higher volatility. So when I get that volatility, sometimes the longer term stuff shuts off. Now, I'm very unlike you guys in that I haven't been successful or as successful in day trading. I have made some money day trading and I could day trade, but I simply don't have the attention span. It's more of a, I can't sit in front of the screen and watch the trade or wait for the setup during the day. It's not something that really I enjoy doing. So I'll run my scans, I'll run my systems at night, and I'll have my trading decisions and my trades all get entered pretty much at the open or some at the close, whether I'm buying or selling or whatever, it doesn't matter. But different systems all do different either at the open or the close. I'm rarely doing any decision making during the day. During the day, I'm researching. I'm working on other projects, but I'm not decision making for my trades during the day. And that's just because it fits my style. And I think it's important that people find something that fits their style. If, day trading is something that you find exhilarating and you like it and you want to do it, you should definitely be day trading. You shouldn't be worrying about holding positions for 3 weeks. But if it's something that causes anxiety or that you can't sit there, then you need to find something that fits for your personality, or you're not going to be successful with it is kind of my overall view. And so that's getting us near 2 o'clock here. Let me ask you guys if you want to go ahead and I'll let you each go. Let me know if there's anything else you want to add to the conversation quickly. But we're looking for also, if you have one trade idea for the week, if you don't, if you're neutral, that's okay. But if you got something you might want to throw out there, that'd be great. And then anything you want to let us know about your site, if you got special offers going on right now or anything, or how people can contact you would be helpful. So Sean, let me go to you. We haven't heard from you in a while. Anything else you want to add about NeuroStreet? Sure. Let us know about the site and if you got a trade idea for a week.
Sure. Do you don't want me to explain that verbally, or just would you like me to share my screen and share something, or how do you want to do that?
Either way, if you want to share your screen, that's fine.
Sure. I'm gonna take the wheel here and share the screen for a second. And so if you want to let me know that you can see that, that'd be great.
Yep.
And so essentially, one of the things that I'm a firm believer of is not everybody is meant to trade a specific way. I think that, like you just said, you need to find your comfort level. And so what we do, because NeuroStreet is not just... We originated as a software vendor, moving into an education environment, then blew up to becoming a trading school. So at the end of the day, my focus as the person in charge of NeuroStreet is we have advanced software, but the goal is to be able to teach you to become a winning trader. And the way we do that is we teach you how to use our software and trading systems. If you're interested in a free pass, we're very open on giving you free exposure to our trading rooms. But we'd like to know whether or not you're more interested in learning market profile first, or if you're learning supply and demand and order flow, or if you're just really not sure and you need some direction. We've got a team of traders that have been customers of ours who are in our trade rooms that are also working with us as account managers that basically will share their screens and experience and also work with our traders to help them figure out what's best for them. It's about really identifying the persona of the trader, knowing that some traders, like you said, aren't really scalpers. And if that's the case, maybe then they should be learning market profile. Or if you don't have the ability to trade market profile with larger stops, you might want to be scalping. And, you know, these are questions that we look at to find. One thing we also like to do is I have a team of educators that run my trading rooms. And so we post their performance here for both rooms. I'll give you an example here as a great example. Since we've been doing a lot of discussion on the market profile today, I'll share this. This is broker verified. So at the bottom, you're going to see tabs down here. These results are quite large, trading large accounts, but that's why he's an educator. He works with us. The returns are verified through broker statements down at the bottom, so traders can go there and look at, which is really important. If you're going to be a trading school, you want to make sure that you're teaching stuff that people are actually making money with. I think that that adds a big level of transparency between what we do. Michael, who runs our supply and demand and order flow room, I think it's really important to know. He's almost we took a path with him. He's a trader that teaches our scalping rooms. And he scalps supply and demand and order flow, done very, very well. He's also in funding prep with Top Step Trader. So Top Step Trader is a company out of Chicago that funds traders. And so we decided to have him go through the combines as a result of showing traders that aren't capitalized that it's possible to actually make money and do well with what we're doing. So that's good to know that we're able to provide both angles. So I would encourage anybody that's interested in just knowing how we trade to sign up for a guest pass and join us. It's free. You get a chance to learn some great things, and you know, you'll be able to get a better perspective of what we do. And that's pretty much it. In terms of a trade idea, I've said a few times today, since the main discussions have been on the S&P 500, for me, I look at the last month's profile, which basically has started here in October to here. Key levels are 2804, 2637.50. These are levels of support and resistance where I think are major levels of importance if we're going to shift sentiment macro style. And if I go down to the weekly profile, and I take a look at what that means. When I said I have a neutral stance, it's because I'm looking at last week and I'm looking at the week before, and we're still trading inside the same area. We haven't left that area. So unless it breaks up and challenges 2800, I don't really have an opinion until I see it. And these are things from a macro perspective that I look at. And I know you'd asked a couple of questions on the execution. And this is the actual software that we use, the proprietary software that uses profiles intraday that allows us to map out the actual areas in which we look to trade. So if I'm looking at timing my entries on an intraday basis, I move down to the actual profile software that we use. And what's interesting is we never did quite get there, but there's a major area today in an intraday level at the 735 area from a resistance perspective and support at 2710. These are two areas in which we would look to engage in trade on the intraday basis if the market got there. So that's pretty much it from the ES perspective. I could cover global assets, but we don't have enough time.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Sean. It was great getting to talk to you and getting to meet you. I hope we get to chat more about the market again sometime soon.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me in. I really appreciate it. Lee, it was a pleasure getting a chance to communicate with you guys and Rob for having us in here, and I'm glad to be here.
All right. Lee, let me let you go before we hang up here. Anything you want to let us know about emoji trading and if you have a trade idea for the week?
Yeah, sure. So our website is www.emojitrading.com, and we also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/emojitrading. What we really aim to do is make it easy for people to get inside order flow and get an understanding of what's going on, because the fundamentals of it, there are only three or four concepts to really grasp. So our software helps you visualize what's going on in terms of supply and demand very easily. So, you know, when are we running out of buyers or sellers? When is a large passive buyer or seller more powerful than the aggressive people? And with that kind of simplicity of understanding, then you can start to make informed trading decisions, which allows you to really tighten up your stops, which allows you to trade for more size, and you can start to assess your risk-reward ratios more effectively. We publish our software at the moment for Sierra Chart. We're going to be expanding very quickly into 14, 3 or 4 other popular platforms. We do offer a free trial on our software, so I'd encourage people really just to take a look around our website, take a look at our YouTube channel, and, you know, feel free to drop us an email and engage in some questions or some ideas. In terms of trade ideas for the week, I think we've got to go higher in order to go lower. I'm expecting the ES futures to take out today's high, whether it's today or, you know, 1-2 days later in the week. Can't be certain, but certainly I'm expecting us to go higher than today. But after we've done that, I'm expecting us to go a long way lower. That would be my trade idea.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Lee. Great getting to talk to you as well. You can find, again, I'm Rob Hanna. You can find me at investiquant.com, where I'm in the overnight trading room a few days a week. And I also write the Navigator Swing newsletter. You can take a free trial of Navigator there if you'd like. You can also follow me on Twitter. My sign is @quantedges. And you can go to Quantifiable Edges and take a free trial there. All you need is an email address so we can send you the nightly letters for a week, and check out the blog there. There's lots of interesting stuff posted to the blog as well a few times a week. So make sure to check me out if you can. I don't have a trade idea for today, but my thought is actually kind of the inverse of Lee. If Lee is off, and then instead of going up, the market goes down over the next few days, heading into the Fed announcement day, if we get a 2 or 3 day pullback from here, I'd be looking to buy into that day, at least for a short term trade. So that's one of the things I'm looking at in anticipation or a possible trade right now. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of other things setting up for entry right now. My overall short-term time frame is neutral, and so I've taken a lot of things off in the last few days rather than looking to get into things. So again, you can get me at @quantedges on Twitter, support at quantifiableedges.com, or Rob at investquant.com. David, thanks for having me back. Sorry I'm talking so long here, and
oh, no problem.
Looking forward to working with you again soon. Have fun in Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah, but thanks, guys. Yeah, I'm going to be in Vegas for the Traders Expo next week. So if anyone watching is going to be there, get in touch. Thanks, guys. Just a reminder to everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or show archives there. And be sure to join us tomorrow for episode number 55 of Analyze Your Trade at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah, tomorrow's the midterm elections, so I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about tomorrow. Jim Kenny, Mike Pisani, Michael Filigera, and Neil Batho will be on for that one. And you can always go to timingresearch.com/live to watch the live broadcasts. And just want to thank all my guests again for this week. Sean Kozak of Neurostreet Trading, or I'm sorry, neurostreet.com. Thank you for being here for the first time. Lee Harris of emojitrading.com and Rob Hanna of investquant.com and quantifiableedges.com. Thanks for moderating again. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.